WMP, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Man plans and God laughs, especially when you're planning your fishing trip. Weather and conditions. Hey, you're inside Rockin' Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of July 10th and 11th. The steam season is here. Need I say more? Man, that stifling heat, suffocating humidity this past week. And I'll tell you, those sustained cold water upwellings really put the clamps on the flounder fishing. Yeah, fish are being caught here and there, back bays, inlets, even out front. But you pretty much have to tap them right on the nose with your bucktail gulp or squid spearing, whatever you're using for bait, to get these things to hit. Their appetites are really, really suppressed with this cold weather. Things should turn around, hopefully, during the next 2 weeks, especially. We have some two great tournaments coming up. July 17th, next Saturday, 28th Annual Duke of Fluke Tournament out of Sterling Harbor Bait and Tackle and Wild. We'll give George or Kathy a call, 609-729-1425. 28 years doing this, man. Holy smokes. Hey, another hot tournament coming up, the 24th. Couple of weeks. It's only its second annual, but what I heard last year, man, monster payouts, great time. It's the King of the Cape Flounder Tournament. We'll have more on that next week. One bite that's really happening, though, starting to happen, I should say. Again, predicated on the water temperature, the sheep's head. Yes, sheep's head are back. They've been back around a month. I'm hearing about some triggerfish also. But joining us on our next segment is Captain Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service. He's also the inventor of the incredible bottom sweeper jig. Dan's going to talk sheep's head, where to find them, what to use, and how to catch them. As well as get into some of the design of the bottom sweeper itself, and also touch on the conservation aspect. And speaking of conservation, Rick Bushnell from Reclam the Bay. Remember we had the mention of that last week during the clamming show? Jeff Norman, Bureau of Marine Fisheries. Rick is the president and founder of Reclam the Bay. Going to talk about the organization a little bit. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio Jam Show. Do we have time? We may have time for a report at the end of the program. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's Talk Station.
On some models, excludes Corvette with GM financing, excludes prior sales. See dealer for details.
By now, most people know that nobody beats a Bennett Chevrolet deal. Because when you buy a new Chevy from Bennett, you pay the same as any GM supplier employee pays. That's right, not 1 cent more. Plus, Bennett gives you all the rebates that can add up to 25% off MSRP. That's up to 25% off. And, of course, Bennett Chevy has 0% financing available. Think about all the ways you save at Bennett Chevrolet. Plus, right now, we want your trade, so we're paying a minimum $7,000 for any clunker. You heard right, a minimum $7,000 towards any pre-owned in stock. Nobody pays more than Bennett. You can imagine how much more we'll pay for a good trade. And there's more. You'll never feel any sales pressure and never waste time with stressful negotiating. Because our non-commissioned sales staff is paid on your satisfaction, not how much you spend. Nobody beats Bennett Chevrolet, and we mean nobody. Find new roads at Bennett Chevy at Harvard Township and BennettChevy.com.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Again, the south winds pretty much put some serious crimping on the fluke situation. Water got ice cold, warmed up again, got ice cold again. One fishery that's, just, again, coming on gangbusters by those in the know, and the word is spreading, albeit slowly. Now, on the one hand, I'm always mega excited. Something new, great fishing opportunity for not only me, but for one and all. On the other hand, these fish are so damn good, so damn great to catch, fight like mothers, and are absolutely fantastic, rolled in panko and deep fried. The sheep's head. The sheep's head, were probably the biggest member of the porgy family. And I'll tell you, they are here. They've been here for, I guess, from what reports I had, maybe a month or so. People started to catch them. Now, sheep's head, again, typically thought of as a southern species, but new. Way back when, they were here in big numbers. In fact, north of it, supposedly they go up to Nova Scotia. But north of here, Sheep's Head Bay, the southern part of Brooklyn, biggest borough in New York. Sheep's Head Bay was called Sheep's Head Bay for the simple reason sheep head were plentiful, numerous, and a popular species. One guide service in particular has the lock on this. And I'll tell you, the man has foresight. I've known him for several years. Great guy, dynamic. He is. He is rock and roll. He's not ready for rock and roll. Dan Schaefer from Insomniac Guide Service is rock and roll. He's sort of a visionary in regard that he started the key on the sheep's head years ago. No one even thought about it. Caught accidentally here and there. Oh, what's this? What's this? Is it good to throw it back? Now that people are starting to recognize how great this species is, Dan, I'm sure, is getting flooded, booked solid, up, down, and sideways, besides his striper biz with the sheep's head. And he is also a tackle inventor, innovator. The bottom sweeper jigs, yep, manufactured by Insomniac Guide Service. Dan Schaefer, and I believe his brother was involved with this. Very dynamic jig heads. You can't believe what this little, like, how do you describe it? Not oblong. I don't know. Maybe Dan, I'll get into that maybe in our next segment, but it is devastating, not only on sheep's head, but on tog as well. Dan, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin. Sorry to get wordy, man. I'm too excited about the sheep's head.
Thomas, what's going on, man?
It's, how you doing, bud? It's sheep's head time, Dan. It's sheep's head time. And, you know, the reports I've heard about a month ago, these fish started to get caught. You've been catching them around that time or even sooner?
I imagine they were probably here sometime in May. Mm-hmm. I got around to targeting them, I think it was June this year. And now those big fish are here. Usually what you see is you have filtering in a, like, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pound fish.
Mm-hmm.
Now those fish on the upper scale, those early fish, they're just commonplace. I think yesterday we had fish of like 7 pounds. We had 4 fish at 7 pounds yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Smallest one, I believe, was like 5, 6 pounds. So the average is now what the biggest average was in May. Biggest one so far this year is like 13 pounds.
Dan, these fish get big. I mean, the state record is what, something like 19 pounds or something caught in Longport a few years ago. And so they've been reputed to get above 26 pounds. They are a great game fish. But again, being a bottom feeder, they seem to be overshadowed mightily by the tog and the sea bass. Yet these things kick ass.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really seeing more sheep's head. Well, I will see more sheep's head than tog throughout the summer. Just the way we fish for them, the bycatch of tog is will go down. The areas of the water column that I fish for them, then tog don't really populate. And
mm-hmm.
since they don't really require a real high salinity, I'll be looking in areas where you usually won't see tog. So I'll be looking for areas that are further away from the inlets versus near the inlets. We've had a very funny year. It's been like a lot of southeast winds, blowing like a lot of like unfertile ocean water in, which has kind of hampered their bite. Now that these southwesterlies are kind of taking over, things will improve in that respect. It'll kind of keep the water temperatures a little bit higher,
mm-hmm.
blowing some of that water out, heating up the back bay. So I want to see water temperatures like in the 70s versus like the low 60s. If it gets into the 80s in the back bay, which it will eventually,
sure.
Then I want to see those cold water uplines come in. And what you'll have is on the incoming bite about halfway through, you'll have those fish like really turn on. I saw something very interesting yesterday. I've seen this before too. People mistaken for cinder worms, but they're actually a sea angel, which is a snail that doesn't have a shell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pelagic snail. They have like little ears on them that they flap, and you'll just see them in tens of thousands of numbers. It looks like a little slug.
Wow.
And yeah, it's funny because I was on the beach the other day catching ghost crabs, and I saw them all over the shoreline. And the back bay yesterday, they were just all through the water column. And I think the largest sheep head that we had caught yesterday came up boat side, and it probably puked up about 200 of the things. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they literally eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
And most fish do, like your red snappers. You know, University of West Florida, I spent hours and hours and hours dissecting red snapper stomachs with my cousin, who's a biologist down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they basically swim around their mouths open, and they eat, like, what's ever available. So the sheep's head have been targeting sea angels. So that's what they've been eating. The one yesterday took a mud crab.
Okay.
It's not like I'm using them for bait. It's just that they'll eat whatever's available. And they were eating tons of those things yesterday. But, you know, the water is a little cool, so their bite tends to be pretty light.
Okay.
to where they come in and they don't really like hammer the rod down. They'll kind of flip the rod tip up a little bit, and you've got like a millisecond to set the hook. You don't have a real, real long time. Once that water temperature stabilizes, they'll just take those rod tips down and they'll just be a lot easier to hook. So right now it's kind of like an expert bite at this point.
Okay.
This year, so far, I think mug crab has been dominant for your larger fish. Asian shore crabs have been working. Fiddlers, I haven't really messed with them yet, but it's those mug crabs. It's a phenomenal bait down south. And learned off a lot of my buddies that fish down south. I talk to people all the way from Texas.
Sure.
And you know, we all brainstorm back and forth. Some people use sea urchins for them. Sea urchins are very effective. Even up here, I've known people that use sea urchins. But sea urchins is a big thing out in the Outer Banks.
Yeah, I've seen some guys nailing them on the the mole crabs, the sand fleas.
I was just down in Ocean City, Maryland for a kayak tournament, the fish and paddle down there. And there is a lot of people using sand fleas down there. There wasn't a lot of sheephead down there. I think the majority of them are up here. Mm-hmm. It seems like between here and the Chesapeake Bay Tunnel Bridge, there's not that many. You get down to like the CBBT and there's just a ton of huge fish, ton of huge black brum. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot going on until you reach this area up here. And this is kind of where like the main body of fish is. So they've kind of cleared out from that Delmarva region.
Okay.
And they're pretty much up here now. So, I mean, that 13 pounder, that's, you know, I'm like, okay, well, it looks like this has gotten started now. When we hooked that fish. And you can see that on the Fisherman Magazine's Instagram page. They had shared my post from that the other day.
Beautiful, yeah.
Just a wonderful fish. Super imperative that you release those big ones. You don't even want to eat a fish that big because it's had 20, 25 years to absorb its environment in the intertidal zone. So, you know, if you are going to be harvesting anything, we generally release everything. But if you have to take something home, you want those 4 to 5 pound fish.
I say, damn, our fave range is 3 to 5 pounds. Bigger, go back. Smaller, go back. We're speaking with Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service. He's also the inventor. But these jigs, Dan, are just absolutely, absolutely incredible. These bottom sweepers, we'll get into that in the next segment. But Dan, before, I want to get in a little bit into your tactics, but you seem to be the one, all of a sudden, sheephead became synonymous. Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service. How long ago was it that you saw the potential of these fish up here? You keyed on them, and now you have the guide service for them.
About 20 years ago. They were never a bycatch. Techniques that we were using back then just weren't conducted catching sheephead. They were your traditional sinker and dropper rig.
Right.
But yeah, I've told the story 1,000 times, but the Aquavitch hammer is basically how I found them. And I think they've been in these numbers for quite some time, probably a lot longer than I've been catching them. Our techniques have just gotten refined to where we're just able to catch more of them. I've had 27 in a day.
Whoa!
Like mid-May. I have friends that have caught much more in a tide than that. So our techniques have just gotten better at catching them. I think they've been here a lot longer than I've been fishing for them. I don't think this is really a resurgence. I just think there's a lot more people fishing for them.
Okay. Dan, we're up against a hard break. Listeners, we have Dan Schaefer online, Insomniac Guide Service, inventor of bottom sweeper jigs. People, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Sheephead times and tactics coming up. Be right back.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
The dust has settled. Our brand new remodel dealership is complete. But Matt Platt Mitsubishi needs... cars now. Matt Mitsubishi will buy your current vehicle for cash up to 125% of Kelley Blue Book fair market value. Cash on the spot. Yes, you heard right. Get cash for your vehicle up to 125% of Kelley Blue Book fair market value. Need a new vehicle? Bring your trade and get up to 125% of KBB fair market value and pay zero interest for 60 months on any 2022 Eclipse Cross in stock. So bring any trade, no matter the make, no matter the mileage, no matter the condition. We want it. Drive the all-new 2022 Outlander, the SUV that won't kill your savings account. And don't forget, Matt Platt Mitsubishi, 4-day love it or leave it return policy. Simply Matt Platt Mitsubishi. For complete details, dial 866-978-2535 or go to mattplatt.com. Offers can't be combined. Discount in lieu of factory rebates and incentives. Not all will qualify. Negative equity refinance to new loan. Trade less, dealer repairs. Matt Platt Mitsubishi in the heart of Glassboro for 30 years. Expires 86-2021.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yo, welcome back to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of July 10th and 11th. Joining us online is Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service, and the inventor of the incredible bottom sweeper jig. Okay, Dan, let's talk sheep's head locations and tactics. Again, bridge pilings, bridge stanchions. What's the dealio? Where do we find these?
You know, it's funny. Last year, I was on an Oceanside flat poling, and we're going along, and like a beautiful bass comes out of the grass, and this is grass. It's not really a sod bank. Mm-hmm. This is stuff that's this kind of grass that grew on sand, and it creates an intertidal meadow, to where on any given high tide, the water flows into the grass and flows out again. You'll see like bank mussels throughout the entire, I wouldn't even call it meadow. I don't know what you would call it, but we saw like a really nice bass coming out of the grass. I was just pulling the boat along, and what's behind it? About a 12-pound sheep's head.
What?
Yeah, you kind of don't know what these fish really do, because I know it was up there on that flood tide, probably eating fiddler crabs, maybe some bank mussels, things like that. So you're really not quite sure, you know, where these fish show up, if they're around docks. You know, down south, it's like I've seen some of my biggest fish on the panhandle, like just swimming along grass flats, to where it's like you wouldn't see like these 10-pound fish on bridges because nobody really catches them. You can see 30 feet down, so right. You can see all the fish down there. You can see them take a jig. But you don't really know where they're at any given time. I have like traditional areas where it's like I know at the start of the incoming tide, I'm going to catch like a big fish on this one drum. And the 13 pounder the other day just came from this historically good start of the incoming tide area. I know it's good for like one fish. I know it's going to be good for a big fish. Usually the smaller fish are in schools. They have stripes. They're like zebras. Sheep's head move around a lot. They're kind of pelagic, where togs tend to stay around structure. They're camouflage. Sheep's head are not camouflage. They have stripes that go up and down. Right. And as they gang up with each other, they look like a bigger body of fish. The only thing that's different between now and like maybe 10 years ago is there's a lot more sharks around. So it could be the case where these fish are being pushed from open water into the back bays.
Okay.
Because of the shark population. We caught one yesterday, a 7-pounder, had, you know, a good hunk of back missing, which is probably a shark.
There you go, yeah.
It took some spines off. But if these fish congregate in the area for too long, they attract a lot of attention, specifically sharks, in the back bay. So we never really find the same school twice.
Okay.
So a certain population shows up one day, then they're all small fish, then they leave, then the more solitary, larger fish show up. They'll be in an area, but you don't really see windows of opportunity usually lasting more than a couple of days.
Okay.
I can stay on like little like windows of opportunity on certain areas for a couple of tides, and then those fish generally move off. So they are constantly moving. There's been some people that have tagged them that the fish have shown up like in the general area like a couple months later. But you know, even if you had a 10% tag return and you had 10,000 fish, and you have 1,000 tag returns, it's still not like a hard science, because there's 90% of the fish out there that do like whatever. I mean, I've seen them 3 miles offshore under buoys. So,
okay.
You know, I'm just not quite sure, you know, exactly where they go or what they do. There's never been any kind of, science is expensive. My cousin's a biologist, published, and everything they do, it's very costly. ROV
sure.
studies, you know, and years and years and years and years upon data collection. So it's one of those things where it's like, I can have my theories, I talk to them about it, but it's still not a hard science. And I can, I can really only guess, you know, what's going on. But I know one thing, it's just a very difficult fish. It's very hard to pinpoint. Bass, striped bass tend to stay in the same areas for like an entire season.
Got to hunt these down, man. Yeah.
Same thing. So, so it's a lot of moving around. We power fish. So we're in an area and we're, you know, we're dropping down a couple of times and then we're just going to the next area. So, it's a lot of like running and gunning. I had Mike Iaconelli on the boat. We did a YouTube episode, a few weeks ago and, you know, we're doing the same thing. It's like, you know, we probably covered maybe 12 miles and then, you know, and then we found, you know, that sheepshead that we're looking for, did a bunch of bass fishing.
Beautiful.
So yeah, we put some miles under the boat.
Well, Dan, now when you're talking to these fish, listeners, they grab, they fight, they're broad-bodied fish. I tell you, Dan, they fight like all get out. What kind of tie, using soft tip rods, a braid, tight drag? What's the dealio?
Yeah, you can use anywhere from like 10 to 15 pound braid. I like 20 pound fluorocarbon leader. We're basically using anywhere from a 6'6" to a 7-foot rod, because you have to get like close to structure and be able to set a hook really well. And a lot of it when you're fighting them is just boat control. You don't want to get them under the boat, so the boat's got to be constantly maneuvered around while you're fighting them. And, you know, some of these fights can be 5 minutes if it's a really big fish. So you just have to be very patient when you're fighting them. But as far as a rod goes, rod's pretty darn important. We're using very medium rods. The same kind of rods that we plug cast with. And if the fish, there's generally two kinds of fish. If it's a very soft rod and there's a little bit of weight, we're using maybe like 3/8 of an ounce, quarter of an ounce if the tide's very slow, half ounce if it's very quick, and 3/4, 1/0 if it's a very fast tide. But generally what you're looking for is you're looking for the pressure of the jig on the rod tip itself.
Right.
When the fish grabs it, usually it slacks out the line, straightens up the rod tip, and that's when you set the hook. So you don't necessarily feel the bite, you see it.
There you go. Yep.
So,
there you go.
Usually tog are like bang, bang, and then pull. These guys are, they just release all the pressure from the rod, and there it is. If the fish is moving through and it's going around a structure and it sees your bait, grabs it, keeps on going, it just draws the rod tip down. Usually those are spoon fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Usually not the really big ones. The really big ones, it's just a slight lift and there's nothing there and you set the hook. It's very similar to jig and take fishing for largemouth fishing where I'm brush,
yep.
Something like that. And you're crawling over a log.
All right.
It sucks it in, man. And all of a sudden, like the line just drops and you set the hook on that bite.
Right.
So there's literally nothing there and you set the hook. So, and a lot of times, if I'm fishing with somebody that's pretty seasoned, I don't even see it before they see it. And they're setting the hook, and I didn't even notice anything. I'm like, okay, you know, that person's in tune with their bite because they set the hook quicker than I even saw it.
Well, Dan, let's get to the bottom. You mentioned the listeners, the bottom sweeper jigs, very unique design. I guess it's designed, but it won't roll over, or whatever. Dan, the years of trial and error in that design to where now it's pretty much in every tackle shop along the Jersey Shore. How long was that from inception to getting it in on the retail level?
A couple of months. I just came up with something that I wanted to use. So it was a couple of months, to where, you know, I thought of something that I wanted and, it wasn't years, just a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys
made all the molds yourself and everything, correct?
Yeah. You have everything machined out and like anything else is made and stuff like that. But yeah, it was only a few months, in development. So, it was just something that I wanted for myself, that I had, you know, that I wanted to use. So everyone else seemed to like a lot. So it's kind of crazy how much it's taken off, from here to Texas.
Yeah.
It was just something that I wanted. You know, that I thought would be the best thing I could possibly use. And that's what I developed. Yeah.
Now, listen, that comes in quarter ounce, 3/8, half ounce, 3/4 ounce with a 1/0 and 2/0 hook, 1 ounce, with a 3/0, 4/0, 1.5 ounce, 2, 2.5 and 3 ounce. Then and you have basically six colors plus the basic lead. I really like about these, there's not too much or too many. You see that so many times. You seem to have keyed on what works. That's it. You don't need all this other BS. This works.
Yeah, a lot of times, like the candy purples, the unpainted, the whites, they're just organic colors that match your environment. Like the white looks very similar to a barnacle.
Right.
The purple looks very similar to, the organic stuff that's down there. The oranges, the pinks, the chartreuses, we usually use those for like overcast days or if the water's stained. Mm-hmm. Then we'll switch to like those brighter colors. If the water is very clear, we just stick to organic colors.
Now, Dan, the hooks on here mean business, man. They're what, the 2x strung? These are badass pieces of metal, bro.
Oh yeah. They're really nice hooks. Super sharp points, and you can catch I think like like 50-pound redfish on the 2-0s. So the way the jigs are designed, it just complements the strength of those hooks, and to where one's not going to pull. So I'm very confident in the I think the 13-pounder we landed. I think that was like a quarter ounce of 1-0, I believe. So they're super strong. So you can have a lot of confidence in whatever comes by. It's going to be able to hold up to the abuse of those fish. But when you're fishing those drums, and you're hooking fish, it's not like you're tog fishing to where you're just trying to yank it out of a structure.
Right.
If you try to yank that fish directly on that structure, the way their body is designed, it's almost like a jack crevalle. And what you want to do is you want to plane those fish out. So you want to go away from the structure, maybe loosen the drag a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen? They're going to follow the path of least resistance. And they're going to go sideways out into the open water. And then you got to hang on for a couple of minutes. It's going to be running and running and running. And you're never quite sure how those fish are hooked. The 13 pounder was just by the skin. The 13 pounder was just by the skin of the lips. So, if you're out there and you're impatient and you're not keeping that drag, decently loose, then, you can pull some of those fish. But if they are aggressive and they're taking the entire jig in, which is what it's designed to do, it's designed to be very compact. And to be ingested, then 9 times out of 10 you're hooking them between the two molars right in the back of the jaw, and it's not going anywhere. It's there's all the leverage is on your side at that point. So once you secure them to that, they don't get you around to anything. But the most important thing is when you hook them, usually they come right up, and you see them, and they're on their sides. And at that point, right then and there, Your inclination is, okay, that fish is beat, but all they have to do is turn their heads.
Right.
And we're using very light tackle. So it's light braid, light line, light rods. And, your option at that point is to back off the drag. You let that fish run. You change the angle of the boat, and you go sideways, and that fish will follow suit. He'll go into open water. These fish are a horizontal fight, not so much of a vertical fight. You get them in open water, they'll turn vertical, but if they're on that structure right there, they will go through 8 different kinds of structure in about 3 seconds, and there's not a whole lot you can do. Right. So the only way to really lose one is to just horse them. Tog loser will live. They usually got about halfway up, they'll make another run, and then they kind of lose their will to live. These fish generally don't get tired. When you go to release them, they explode. So they have a lot more stamina than those wrasses.
The journalist on the line is Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service. Topic is sheep's head, and we're just mentioning his great bottom sweeper jig series. Well, Dan, before we get to the last thing, you mentioned earlier in the first segment a conservation thing. Any particular brand of tackle, the setup that you would recommend that you use? Like eliminates your trial and errors. You said 7, 7.5, or whatever. What's your setup?
Personally, I like G. Loomis's line of green waters.
Mm-hmm.
That rod's been around forever. It's pretty hard to improve on that series. As far as that specific thing, I do have an NRX, and it's a phenomenal rod. But it's I like it for when I'm fishing over a wreck, and I'm trying to get a fish out of something from a vertical standpoint. But for what we're doing here, it's the seven foot quarter to 5/8 green water is pretty dominant as far as inshore fishing goes, and I think it's for the southeast as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you know, it's just an all around great utility rod. As far as reels go, you can use 2500. I prefer a 3000 series reel.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a little bit more better for all my plug casting and stuff like that. But you know, usually no larger than that. You want a very light setup. You want to be able to see exactly what's going on. So you don't want your tackle being too heavy to hamper you down. So usually, I think right now I'm running a 3000 Stradic. It's pretty standard.
Shimano, there you go.
So right. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much what I use. I keep it pretty simple.
Dan, your choice of braid?
Power Post Slick 8's really good. Spartabar Stealth, I've used that for years. But yeah, Power Post Slick 8 in that realm is real nice. I've heard a lot of people having a lot of good luck with Suffix, you know, another quality line. But there's a lot of lines out there, you know, so if somebody has success with something that they like, and you know, that's their style.
Dan, the end game, you have a big, big ass sheep set on the side of the boat. Net, what's the deal? Using a net? What are you know, getting this thing in the boat?
I'm using a net. I'm using a net. No. You have to be very careful with these fish when you get in the boat, because like I said, they don't get tired. So, you know, even picking them up, you got to be super careful because they have spines on all four sides.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those fish you have to handle. You have to be very careful handling them. If you're taking a photo with a 13-pound fish, I think I had a client drop on my leg last year, and it looked like a tiger got a hold of my shin. Yeah, so you got to be really careful with these things. They're pretty brutal.
Dan, on the conservation, again, you mentioned earlier the bigger fish you let go naturally. Your take, your opinion, seeing more people fishing, more increasing numbers of anglers out there, more pressure on the resource. Can it stand it handling the fish properly, releasing properly? Some are being kept for harvest. How do you see this playing out? I think the sheep said this fishery can, you know, take hold and become even more popular.
I think so. You know, I've heard a lot of stories from people that spirit fish and, you know, inshore around the rocks and stuff like that. And, you know, they see a wall of like 150 fish. Usually when I'm out there, I don't see anybody fishing. I have a couple of friends. Most of the guys in the kayaks are in the know.
There you go. Yep.
They have really good like maneuverability. For the most part, they like let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Those big fish are imperative though. Probably not the best ones to eat. Certainly the ones that are more important to the population. So, sure. I just try to, you know, lead by example. So.
Okay, Dan Schaefer, Insomniac Guide Service. Based out of Stone Harbor. Give that Facebook page, phone number, et cetera. Go.
Instagram, Insomniac Guide. Instagram, Bottom Super Jigs. And 609-780-5124. My schedule's pretty tight.
Yeah.
I'm generally not taking on new clients. So I have so many years of clientele. But, you know, there is a chance that you can get in there. If I have cancellations, stuff like that. So it's never terrible to check.
Listeners, it'll be a fishing experience you won't soon forget. And also, if you can't get hold of Dan, can't book him, get to the tack shop, get these bottom sweeper jigs, try them along the jetties. Dan, that's an incredible sheep's head bite going on along some of the jetties in Atlantic City, but that's another topic. But these bottom sweeper jigs, Dan, green crab, any kind of crab work pretty much?
No.
Oh, there you go.
No. Green crabs, I tend to shy away from. What you want is a small live crab. Me personally, I take off the claws because it just adds drag. So mm-hmm. when you're dropping down, you know, you want something that's nice, compact, and cut the current. So even if you're using a physical, I usually take off the big claw. Not that you're not going to catch a fish with a crab with a claw on, but I just like to remove them just for error, you know, just for hydrodynamics of the water getting by. And, you know, I want the lightest possible setup I can go with. So I, you know, if I can get away with a quarter, I'm using a quarter as a type X. I might go to a 3/8. If it's really long, you know, I'm using a half ounce with that 3/4. So, but yeah, green crabs, not so much. You can find those little tiny ones. We call them lines. They're probably about like an inch across.
Okay.
They're pretty good. Yeah, they're pretty good. But you know, sand fleas, not so much. I just don't like the way they can be shelled so quickly. I know they're very popular in Delaware, I believe, certainly popular in Delmarva.
Yep.
But generally I'm using, you know, some other type. So, yeah, green crab is certainly not the best bet. Especially one that's been quartered or something like that. I know that down the, Chesapeake Bay Tunnel region, they're on blue claws. We make like a 1 ounce 4-0 for those fish down there for this big black drum. Cause he's using a bigger bait and, you know, what we're using around here, you know, 1-0's, probably my favorite. If you got to go to a 1 ounce 2-0 and the water's like moving like really quick, you know, that'll work too. But I'm going to err on the as small as I can possibly go.
There you go.
You know, yep.
Well, Dan, thanks for joining us at Rackman. You have a great season. Hope to see you on the water one of these days. Now you have, you have YouTube videos on your sheephead antics, correct?
Mm-hmm. I do. I'm on a bunch of podcasts. All you got to do is just kind of Google it and you'll find everything. But Insomniac Guide on Instagram, Bottom Super Jigs on Instagram. You can keep up to date with everything that's going on. And bottomsuperjigs.com is kind of the epicenter of the whole Bottom Super Jigs movement. So you can go on there and keep up to date with everything as well.
Yeah, Dan, have a great season.
Email list.
Have a great season. Right. We hope to see you soon, man. Be good.
All right, thanks.
See you. Danny Schaefer right there, way long on that segment. Be right back, Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's number one talk station.
Fox News, I'm Jill Nato. Johns Hopkins says there were nearly 47,000 new cases of COVID in the U.S. Friday. That's more than double the cases reported Thursday. A police officer in Doyleen, Louisiana, killed last night. It happened while he responded to a disturbance.
We lost a good man. Family lost. Good husband.
Webster Parish Sheriff Jason Parker identified that officer as William Earl Collins, Jr., a suspect's in custody. A small miracle out of the collapsed condo in Surfside, Florida. A cat found wandering the area given to a rescue group. That group reunited the cat with members of his family who survived the collapse. Family friend Maria Gaspari.
Just, you know, good news in the middle of all this craziness and all the sadness. It brings hope.
That cat named Banks had been living on the 9th floor of the building. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. While we cannot rule out a thunderstorm either day this weekend, much of the time will be rain-free. Sunday appears to be the most likely day. Overnight humid, low 70. Saturday warm and humid with some sun, high 85. Partly cloudy Saturday night, low 71. Humid Sunday, an afternoon thunderstorm, high 86. Monday very warm and humid, high 88. I'm AccuWeather's Kara Babinski on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
That was Captain Danny Schaefer on the sheep's head. The sheep's head bite is going, it's going to get stronger. It's since the water warms up a little bit, we touch on the conservation aspect. You really don't want to keep the big ones, the big breeders. One, they accumulate a lot of stuff in their system, if you know what I mean. And, you know, get a sort of repopulate, get that population going again. They were up here, they're making a comeback. Repopulation, helping populations. Remember last week we had Jeff Norman on, Bureau of Marine Fisheries, clams in New Jersey, and we did a nice clamming segment with Bobby Misak. Jeff mentioned an organization, Reclam the Bay. Now, I had heard about this organization way back when, early to mid 2005, 2006, 2007, organization just started. I said, man, that's a pretty big undertaking these people are starting. Well, wow, they are going into their 16th year. Joining us on the line right now is Rick Bushnell. He is the president and founder of Reclam the Bay. Let's talk conservation or reestablishing clams. Vital. Vital not only to the New Jersey economy, the shore economy, but to the ecosystem itself. Now, I understand they do clams and they do oysters. Let's concentrate on the clams right now. Rick, thanks for joining us. How you doing, little brother?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
Reclam the Bay, man. This was, I spoke to Jeff afterwards. He said, Tom, they go gangbusters, man. Now, this is a monster undertaking. He was talking hatcheries. He was talking, whoa, what is Reclam the Bay all about? Go.
Well, what we're really all about is education and getting people to understand what goes on in the Bay, how important the Bay is, and what they can do to improve the Bay, but then also to then maintain the Bay, take care of it. So we use growing shellfish as a teaching moment, really. However, there's some tremendous benefits that come from growing and putting clams and oysters in the Bay.
Now, you said, the clams, the little ones are called seeds. What's the process? You guys get them from hatcheries, you're out there planting them. Which areas, how do you choose the areas? What's the deal?
Yeah. Well, we do get them from local hatcheries. As a matter of fact, last week and this week are the weeks that we are receiving our seed. We'll get, the Bureau of Shell Fisheries, Jeff Norman, and the others, they pay for seed that we grow. We also buy our own seed.
Wow.
But you know, your tax dollars and things that you're doing, you're buying your clam lessons, those things go to help Bureau of Shell Fisheries put more clams in the Bay. And that's mainly to support wild catch and to hopefully regenerate the population of clams. And we're having real trouble getting clams to to reproduce. That's taken a long time.
Wow.
But we do clam seed, then we also do oysters, and we've been doing oysters as long as we've been doing clams. The important difference is that while a clam will filter around 15 to 20 gallons of water a day, taking the algae out, making the water less turbid, all those good things, an oyster, an adult oyster, will do more like 50 gallons of water a day. So if you're just really, if you're just thinking about water quality and the improvement of reduction of turbidity, then oysters are really helpful. The nature is a balance.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is that clams can grow virtually anywhere in this bay. They can grow in the sand. They can grow in the mucky bottom. They can grow almost anywhere. Oysters need something hard to sit on. So the amount of shoreline where they can grow is limited. A lot of the oysters now that are starting to grow are actually offspring of oystermen that are growing oysters as oyster farmers in the bay. We didn't have any of that when Reclaim the Bay started. We like to think that by putting more emphasis on the bay, some guys saw an opportunity to make some money by growing oysters. And now we've got about 15 local oystermen and women growing oysters in the bay and delivering to the restaurants. And, you know, we're really developing an oyster industry.
Wow.
Fella that runs that named Matt Gregg, he started a thing called the Oyster Collective. So the oyster growers have one place where they can take their oysters to be distributed and everything. And Matt Gregg started off as an intern at Reclam the Bay, by the way.
Wow. Well, listen, Rick, is it, again, the environmental factor where clam and oyster populations devastated? I know way back when in Great Bay, wasn't there some blight or something that hit the oysters and what have you? Is it the pollution?
Well,
what was it? What was the cause of the crashes?
Well, oysters, a couple of things. Oysters, we haven't had oysters in, and when we talk about Barnegat Bay, we're really talking about the Barnegat Bay estuary,
right,
which is Little Egg Harbor, Manahawkin, and then Barnegat Bay. So it's that whole estuary. The oystering way back long time ago in the 20s was north. And I'm not getting into all the reasons why that disappeared, but it did. There wasn't that much oystering in the southern part of the bay, although there were a fair amount of wild oysters, but there were so many oysters over in the Delaware Bay that was the oyster capital of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of lost the oysters. I think it was silt, a lot of heavy construction, one thing or another.
Right.
Clams, they were talking about the problems with clams. there's a thing called brown tide. You know, you get red tide. You hear about that all the time down in Florida. We got a brown tide up here. And we haven't had a brown tide for a significant number of years. The brown tide kind of comes and goes, and it could be because of the amount of fresh water coming from rainstorms or lack thereof and those kinds of things. It was mainly overfishing, and overdevelopment that really took our clam population. Now what we're studying with Rutgers and Stockton and, you know, all the universities really, is more the composition of the bay's chemical makeup. We're concerned about the acidification of the water. That's one of the things that affects the shell, and that affects how many survive their spawn and one thing or another. So there are a lot of facets. The thing that I can encourage people about is more and more people are aware of the importance of the bay and the things that need to be done to care for it. Mm-hmm. That's where it all starts. You know, humans, me, my uncles back in the 50s, we kind of messed this thing up. So we need to take, you know, ownership of what we've done and teach other people how to take care of it. So that's really what I say. It's really a big teaching thing, but it has all these great ramifications. The more oysters that are being grown, the more spat. That's just the natural, you know, natural reproduction. But the oyster growers only take the oysters that are ready to eat. All that spat, as we call it, the juveniles that are floating around in the bay and ultimately landing somewhere, that's bringing more life into the bay. And the more life you have in the bay, life begets life. So all species will improve when you increase the habitat. And oyster habitat's really good. Oysters create reefs. And within those reef systems, you wind up with all kinds of little flounders that are hiding from predators and mummy chucks. And the other thing that hide in there are bay scallops. So we're starting to see some bay scallops come back. All of this is dependent on the quality of the water, the lack of turbidity. The sunlight needs to get into the water to be able to stimulate eelgrass at the bottom, because as you know, and all your fishermen buddies know, the eelgrass is the incubator where all bay life lives. Eels, eel shrimp, or grass shrimp, eels, bay scallops, little flounder, bass, everything lives in there. So, you know, if we really were doing a good thing, we'd be re-grassing the bay as much as reclamming the bay.
Okay, Rick, as I mentioned, you know, pollution is a big factor. What about predatory factors where the pendulum has swung the other way? From my end of things, these cow-nose rays, huge schools of cow-nose rays and other rays coming. I'm not talking about the skates, the rays. They can wreak havoc on these oyster and clam, you know, and clam areas, can they not?
Oh, absolutely. And so everything is connected in the bay. Now, cow-nose rays didn't used to be a problem when I was a kid. And whenever you see a population expand beyond what's healthy, something has gone wrong. You know, the natural predator for the ray is the shark. Mm-hmm. So when we overfished the shark, we took out the alpha predator for the cow-nose ray. The cow-nose rays can decimate a clam bed. I mean, it's unbelievable. And nature designed them to be able to have a lower protruding mandible. They scoop into a clam bed, and they can scoop up all the clams and oysters as well.
Right.
Dale Parsons, who's a fifth generation clammer.
Parsons, that's South Green Street in Tuckerton, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, do I know my areas or what, people?
Yeah, so he has lost. You want to talk to somebody who can tell you about tremendous loss from cow nose rays? He sure can. Yeah, they're terrible. Yeah, we ought to open up that bow fishing for him. I think it's a great idea.
Man, we've been shout out to Captain Dom Troisi and full bow draw fishing. I've been trying that for years. We've been making concerted effort behind the scenes, but you know the politics and ancillary factors involved in that. Rick, we'll talk over that sometime over. How about some fried blue points or fried Jersey oysters? We'll go with that. We're speaking with Rick Bushnell, president and founder of Reclam the Bay. Rick, give that website, phone number, Facebook page. What do you got?
Yeah, all of the above. But the easiest thing is just go on the just Google reclamthebay.org, reclamthebay, org. That's our website. We've got a store out there. Got a lot of information about all the things that we do. Thanks for letting me plug them.
Just great work, Rick Gregor, and keep it up. You have a fantastic crew out there. Now, listen, I understand on Thursdays there is, you guys have a table or a booth set up at a farmer's market in Barnegat?
Yeah, we do Barnegat. We also do Stafford and Surf City. So,
Okay. Let's just check it out. Reclaim the Bay. One more time, Google reclaimthebay.org. Find out what this great organization is all about. Rick, you have a great season. Hope to see you sometime.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Take care, brother. We'll see you. Up against a break. Be right back. Rack and Finn ready. Reclaim the Bay. Oh, man, I can go for some clams at Eggnog right now. I'm thinking about it. Mary, mother of God.
If you're wondering what to do with your money in these unusual economic times, or if you have questions about retirement planning, IRAs, 401ks, or taxes, then listen to The Heart of Your Money, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, featuring author and financial expert Joe Yakovich. The Heart of Your Money will focus on you, your family, and your financial portfolio. The Heart of Your Money with Joe Yakovich. Saturday morning at 8 on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
At Ocean First Bank, our first thought is you. We put you first in all we do. Community banking for a century. We treat you like your family. Whatever you need, whatever your dream, let's make it a reality.
When your dream is building a new home, we offer mortgage options designed with your convenience in mind, like combining your construction and permanent loan into just one closing, saving you time for the really fun stuff, like planning that housewarming party.
Whatever you need, whatever your dream, let's make it a reality. Ocean First Bank, putting you first.
Member FDIC. Housing Opportunity Lender.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel 6, leaving the light on for Meemaw and Peepaw and all the other Maws and Paws visiting the close to 4 million grandbabies born last year who've only seen you on a laptop. For all the bubbies, nanas, and papas ready to finally get your arms around those little loves, Motel 6 offers clean, comfortable rooms at a great low rate. We'll even call you Giga if you want. I'm Tom Bobo Baudet for Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is like the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Kind of like choosing Charles Barkley in a pickup game.
We'll take Barkley.
Ha! First pick! Sorry, kids!
Yep, even easier than that. And with our top-rated app, you can bank anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision.
Okay, here's the plan. Pass me the ball every time.
This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
New consumer accounts only. Approval required. Terms apply. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Back for our final segment, Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of July 10th and 11th. Let's head down to Utch's Marina. There, 1121 New Jersey Route 109 in Cape May. Dave Masterson's going to give us a report. What's happening around the Cape? What's happening, Dave? Talk to me.
Not too much, Tom. We're doing good. There's been some nice flounder caught. The Wildwood Reef recently has been producing more than the Cape May Reef. boats are going out, and they're of course still catching shorts, but there's been some nice size flounder mixed in there.
Is it basically a gulp game, Dave?
No, most of our boaters are going out with not only gulp but also minnows, squid, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're all doing well. All the baits. The other thing is tuna's been pretty good.
Ooh.
The Wilmington has been producing yellowfin, nice size yellowfin.
Nice.
Also the Lindy.
Nice.
We've had a few boats hit the Wilmington and also the Lindy. Lindy's a little bit of a run, but
right.
The Baltimore hasn't been producing. I was actually at the tip of the Baltimore on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We saw no life.
It's like the Orioles. They have no life. Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't see any bait. We didn't see turtles. No,
wow.
No dolphin, nothing.
Well, Dave, the Wilmington and the Lindy, is it a troll bite or did the chunking start yet? What's the deal?
No, it's been mainly trolling as far as I know.
Okay.
No one's told me they've been chunking. Now, but
Dave, are you hearing any white marlin yet?
Haven't heard of any. You know, we don't have a whole lot of sport boats here that run off.
Right.
But you know, I haven't heard of any whites being caught.
Okay, now Dave, back inside. Any weak fish at night?
Yeah, they're still catching weak fish. Up along the side banks, and also along the jetties. You know, almost every day I hear of weak fish being caught. You know, again, light bucktails, small pink plastic. You know, that's been doing good.
Excellent. Okay, Dave, listen, we're going to be wrapping up the show. One last thing. Any stripers around still?
You know, occasionally I hear of somebody catching a bass. Of course, there's resident bass along the side banks,
right.
You know, early evening.
Mm-hmm.
And even the jetty, you know, early evening when there's no boat traffic and good tide. You know, there's a lot of bunker in the bay. So one thing I would try would be live lining bunker under the bunker pods. Because you know the bass are under them.
Okay, Dave, listen, we'll talk to you guys next week. You take care, man.
Okay, you too, Tom. Have a good weekend.
You too. That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Get out there and enjoy. Okay, we got some weather. This is going to clear up. Don't worry. And the fish and the crabs are already wet. No big deal on that. Just you see lightning. Get the hell away from the water. We'll see you next week. Rack and Fin Radio. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders. God bless law enforcement. See you next week. Tom P., Rack and Fin Radio. Reclaim the bay.
95.5 FM and